It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs. As always, big thank you to our presenting sponsors, Exterior Home Solutions, for making this coverage possible. That phone number for a free estimate is 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been East Tennessee's number one choice in garage, window, siding, roofing since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. All right, big week coming up for the University of Tennessee. Thanksgiving's Thursday, but there's a football game to be played in the Mid-State coming up on Saturday, Tennessee and Vanderbilt. We'll touch on that. Of course, Tennessee-UTEP 56-0. That was the expected outcome. College football playoff rankings will be re-released on Tuesday night. Tennessee will be back in the field. There's a lot of hoops talk as well, but Brent Hubbs, obviously Tennessee's in a really good spot right now. Handled business on Saturday in a game that it should have. It got a lot of help, and you win. You're in, and what more can you want as a competitor?
Well, I mean, and as a coach and everything, I said this on the two-minute drill on Monday. I think it's the perfect setup, Austin, for Josh Heupel and the program, because now you're not scoreboard watching. It's not about a beauty contest. You get to tell your team, hey, guys, when we had our first team meeting back in January and we laid out goals, it was to make the college football playoff. That goal is very attainable if we take care of business. But you also got to understand how hard it is to take care of business. Look at what happened last week in the SEC. It's kind of the perfect setup for Josh Heupel to get his team ready to play in the Mid-State on Saturday.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, I think you were the one that said it post-game Saturday night. Like, you don't have to – like, you control your own destiny. Like, if you don't make it, it's on you. It's not on some – you know, athletic director sitting in a boardroom in Dallas, Texas. It's on you. You know, you have everything in front of you. Go in, you're in. And then, you know, who knows what happens after that, whether you're on the road or at home, but you're in and you're playing for it. And that's half the battle. So, you know, I think this is a great situation for Tennessee. And again, I think, you know, Vanderbilt's going to come out and they're going to punch early. This is going to be a Super Bowl type game for them. But you know, the one thing in years past, sometimes when you've been playing Vanderbilt, they've been playing for bowl eligibility. They're bowl eligible. So, I mean, that little, you know, carrot is not dangling out there for them. This is just about pride for the Commodores and Tennessee. It's about pride and a lot more.
Yeah. That carrot's already taken care of, obviously, in terms of bowl eligibility, but the fact to play spoiler against Tennessee, ooh, that's a whole lot of motivation for a Vanderbilt club. And of course that fan base. Rob, Tennessee beat UTEP 56-0. Can we take anything from that game in preparation for Vanderbilt?
No, I don't think so. I mean, just took care of business. I mean, a slow start, at least for the offense. And, you know, for me, just it was just kind of a check on the leadership, the character. I mean, a lot of times I think, you know, you think teams are going to come out all fired up on senior day, but I think a lot of times the emotions are a little too much. I think you see that. I think that was – maybe the case with Tennessee, just a little, you know, a little too hyped up, you know, guys going through it. But as far as like what we saw in the field, you know, if you want to take a positive, I thought maybe the second, third quarters, what you saw from Nico, maybe that's continued growth from him, the rhythm that he finally got into, you know, after what was a really, really shaky start for him. But, you know, I wouldn't take a lot away from that. Just, you know, stayed healthy was probably my biggest takeaway for this game with what's on the table.
I think one of the talking points, Brent, when looking at Vanderbilt, and of course, you know, the quarterback's mobile, he's a playmaker. I mean, as Vanderbilt's offense goes as he goes, he's a bit banged up right now, but we know he's a runner. He, you know, leads Vanderbilt in rushing yards and rushing attempts and rushing touchdowns. Skylar Locklear, you know, is not as good as what you're going to see on Saturday, but it did give Tennessee a little bit of a glimpse, and then Tennessee's played mobile quarterbacks. That is something that Tennessee will need to do a better job of this Saturday than it did last Saturday at certain points in times, because he's going to run it, and third and mid, third and, you know, seven or eight, very attainable for Pavia.
Yeah, I mean, I think the quarterback's legs, yeah, okay, maybe there's some the fact that Locklear from UTEP could run, but I think one of the differences when you look at what Vanderbilt's doing in the run game, I mean, how many design quarterback runs were there by UTEP versus
none
being scrambled? And I think when you look at Vanderbilt, there's a lot of design quarterback runs, you know, really adept with the ball handling, that type of thing, and I think that's a bit different than Locklear. So Yeah, I mean, in the rush lanes, you've got to do some things there. But, I mean, finding the football, staying in your lane, running your keys, all the things you're supposed to do will be really challenging. Because I don't know, and Rob, Austin, Eric, anybody jump in here, who have they played that's been really quarterback-heavy run by design runs? Tylan Green from Arkansas is a guy who can scramble around and make plays. We saw that with Locklear. Milroe, I guess, is the only one. I don't know that they ran him a ton. They did run him some. That's probably the only one that they played that's been a ton of design runs for them. So that's a little bit different that Tennessee will have to deal with on Saturday compared to what they just played with UTEP and their quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, with those design quarterback runs, Rob, I mean, you have to count for, you have an extra blocker. You know, Tennessee did at least one design quarterback run, and then, of course, Nego pulled that other one and ran around for 29 yards. But when you do that, you go into the play knowing you have 10 blockers, essentially. And that's the difference in, you know, design and then kind of scrambling around and then just trying to get what you can. Gap integrity, rush lanes having to stay slim, ends not getting too far upfield. Linebackers are going to be stressed in this game for sure. I mean, Arian Carter, Jeremiah T. Lander, Jalen Smith, whoever's in there, Caleb Perry, they're going to have to be on their A game because that is going to be a focus for Vanderbilt. It's got to be. I mean, that's the nucleus of their offense, that and the tight end.
Yeah, and you know, they're not explosive at all, but I'll tip my hat to them. I mean, they manufacture first downs. I mean, I think that's how that's kind of how they must look at it from the outside looking in, because, you know, they don't get chunk plays. They don't have, you know, big play guys on the perimeter, but they manage to move the chains. I mean, their average yards per play is, you know, one of the lowest in the league, but they're right in the middle of the pack when it comes to third down conversion. So they do a good job of staying, you know, on schedule, you know, third manageable. But you're right, EC. Pavia, huge part of what they do. You wonder about his health, you know, this week, especially the tough game in Baton Rouge for them that last week. But what I like about this matchup for Tennessee, now they didn't do a good job of it at Georgia, but generating negative plays, something they've been great at, one of the best in the country. They had 14 tackles for loss last weekend at UTEP. And this Vanderbilt offense, man, you get them off schedule, you know, second and 12, you know, that's a tough hill for this offense to climb. That's one of the reasons, a lot of things I like about this matchup, but that's one, is the way Tennessee can generate negative plays defensively. And it doesn't have to be a 7-yard sack. I mean, this offense loses 3 yards and it changes everything about it.
Yeah, this offensive line for Vanderbilt's blocking at a 3.8 yard per carry clip. They've only allowed 14 sacks, and I don't want to take anything away from them. That's a really good number through 11 games, and I think Pavia really makes that right.
And there ain't a lot of seven-step drops to that either.
Yeah, true. So I do think that the defensive line obviously is going to have to be a focal point, Austin. Two TFLs in Athens 2 weeks ago. Clearly, that cannot be the same formula. It's not going to be 15 like you saw against UTEP, but Tennessee's got to win the line of scrimmage up front.
Well, they do. And, you know, again, I think, you know, having good eye discipline here is going to be key. I mean, Hubs talks about all the ball handling, and it's so true. I mean, you get caught looking one way, and all of a sudden the ball is going the other, and that's 25 yards later, and it's changing things. And Rob's right. Like, you know, getting Vanderbilt in third and medium, third and long, that's going to be the key to getting off the field, forcing them into things that they don't want to do. And it all starts up front. I mean, you know, when Tennessee's defensive line does what they have done most of the year, the rest of the defense plays pretty well. So I think, you know, defensively, it all starts up front. You got to have that group play really disciplined football. You can't freelance, you know, if you're an edge guy. You got to, you know, stay in your gaps. You know, don't let, you know, Vanderbilt break contain. And if you can do that, then I think that you can have some success, get off the field and get the ball back to your offense.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's converting, going into the LSU game, they were converting third downs at a clip of 46% on the year. Over 32 minutes of time of possession. They want to shorten this game, is what they want to do. They want to eat clock, and they want to make it a limited possession game. We saw that in the second half in Athens, Georgia. Really, you know, Georgia did that. I think Tennessee had the ball, what, three times in the second half, maybe four? That's going to be – I mean, that's why getting off the field is such a key, and I think getting off to a good start is important in this game because, you know, you don't want to fall behind and be playing catch-up in this game with a team – that's running some option football and are just trying to eat the clock and shorten the game up on you. How does Josh Heupel coach it? You know, are you more aggressive because of those things? Do you play the field position game you've been playing? I think that all depends on how you're doing on the scoreboard early in this game. That's why you got to get off to a good start. I just don't think you want to fall behind in this one and let them shrink the game down on you with the stuff that they do with the ball control offense. Because they can be frustrating, right, Rob? I mean, you look at what they can do. They can frustrate an offensive coordinator on the other team, frustrate a quarterback, make you try to do too much because you're not sure how many times you're going to get the ball if you can't get off the field on third down.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about, I mean, I'm not done a complete deep dive yet, but it's one of the things that's interesting. You talk about their time of possession. They've also run fewer offensive plays than anybody in the league. So that tells you, I mean, they're milking it. I mean, so it's, I mean, that's going to, you wonder how frustrated Josh Heupel will be if it, you know, if it turns into like one of those games where he has four possessions in the first half. You know, is he going to go for it on, you know, fourth and two on his own 37, you know, late in the second quarter? But that's, all the reasons you're saying, Hubbard, I think if they start fast, you put them in a 10-0 hole, you know, it takes Vandy out of everything they want to do. I mean, that keep away game, you know, milking the clock, that goes out the window.
Defensively, Vanderbilt is holding opponents to a 55% clip, touchdowns in the red zone. They've got 8 interceptions, 12 total takeaways. They've improved greatly defending the run. They were dead last by a country mile and defending the run a season ago. That's improved to their 8th in the SEC at 123. Of course, you know, Tennessee wants to run the football. Tennessee's got one of the best rushing offenses in the country. I think obviously that, I mean, this, you can say the same thing for every game, relying on number 6, letting him get going early and then letting Nico kind of build off that is going to be important in this start because, yeah, if you get Vanderbilt down 10-0 hole, I mean, it's really difficult for that offense to climb out of it, whereas if they're holding the football and running for first downs and doing some things, they can certainly pester you.
Hey, just run on the screen. I have to jump in here. Let's say Tennessee wins the toss. Traditionally, Josh Heupel defers. But because of the way Vanderbilt plays, do you take the ball in this game just to get your offense on the field?
No, I don't think he does. I mean, I think that Josh Heupel is such a big believer in the middle eight and the ability to flip the game in the middle eight with a late score and then to start the second half with the score. I just think that he will continue to go in the trend that he has done in the past, which is
I bring that up just because Arkansas, they got it and they kept the ball for more than half the first quarter before you ever
– Yeah, no, I agree. I understand what you're saying. I think that Josh Heupel is going to believe in his defense.
Sure.
You know, we're sitting here talking about all these numbers, and then you look at where LSU, what LSU did to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt only converted 2 of 10 third downs in the game. Vanderbilt had the football 25 minutes and 17 seconds, LSU 34-43. LSU completely flipped a script on Vanderbilt and what they like to do, and that was with giving up an early score on a double move, right? So I think you got to believe in your defense. And I just think Tennessee's got to get off to a good start there. I see your point, but I think Josh Heupel believes in his defense enough that he's going to continue to play that middle eight game if he can. I think if Vanderbilt wins the toss, they do take the football because they want to try to keep Tennessee on the sideline and slow it down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I will tell you this. I think what Rob's saying is correct. If you can jump out of it's like a team, it's like playing a team in high school that runs the wing T, and if you can get up on them early and force them to be who they are not, then that's when you really start to kind of, you know, run downhill a little bit as an offense and as a team. So, I mean, like, I think getting out of the gates in this thing is paramount because if you can take Vanderbilt and make them do something they're not comfortable doing and have to throw it a bunch and play a little faster, then you force them into maybe making some mistakes.
Unless it's week 2 of the high school football season, Battle of the Bridge, Lenoir City ran that 2-minute offense. That was the best offense they had in the entire game. Nearly came back and won. Rob, I think hidden yardage is going to be big in this game as well. Obviously, if Vanderbilt's going to win this football game, they got to win special teams. Yeah, they've got a pretty good special teams unit. Knox Catholic alum is the place kicker. He's booted 5 50-yard-plus field goals on the season so far. They've got a really good returner that's very comparable to Boo Carter. He's averaging 16 yards per return. He has taken one back to the house. Tennessee needs to be good on special teams, obviously, with Boo Carter returning punts. They need to be good with their coverage units and all that because, again, you do not want to start off the way you did against UTEP offensively. But if your special teams is helping you and, of course, your defense is helping you, then it's, you know, you're buying yourself some time, and we've seen that a lot of times this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, against this kind of offense that you're seeing in Vandy, you got to love what you've seen from Jackson Ross the last couple of weeks. And he's been sharp.
Yep.
Put two inside the 10 last week. I don't know how many – was it two inside the 10 at Georgia? I know like one at least, but two, you know, really pegged two down there tight, like just with a wedge. And, I mean, how long – who's been banging the drum harder for Buda return putts? Hubbard or AP since August? I don't know, but – that one, I mean, I don't know that anybody's really surprised. I don't know if anybody called it like this, but I mean, three straight weeks, I mean, fireworks.
Do you think, kind of on that note, Brent, do you think they just wanted to simplify things, and then just give them a little bit more, get them a little bit more? Because there's no reason why he shouldn't have been returning a punt since day one, but, you know, they obviously wanted him to be a big part of this the defense. So was it just kind of spoon-feeding him earlier and then kind of putting more responsibility on him? Because, again, he should have been returning punts since day one.
Well, I mean, I think it was about, yeah, not overloading him. He was, you know, they were putting a lot on him on defense. And I think it was about Boo's maturity. And I'm not saying anything. I don't mean Boo's a bad kid or there's a problem there or whatever. But, I mean, he's a freshman. Everything in football's come easy for him. I think if you talk to people, Austin, within the program, Boo Carter made a real shift in kind of his preparation for games after the loss to Arkansas. And I think that preparation has continued to improve, that he's gained everybody's trust. And, you know, they were finally willing to put him back there, which I think should have happened earlier. Okay. I've been saying that for a while because I don't think you have to be coached to make the first guy miss. You either have that or you don't have that. And he clearly has that. But I think Boo's preparation has been much better since that loss at Arkansas. I think it's built throughout the middle part of this season.
Yeah, Eric, I agree.
I was just going to say on the special teams big picture, I think that's another reason you like Tennessee in this matchup because they don't have holes there. I mean, you know, Max Gilbert went through that one long midseason, but, I mean, they're not a team where they have holes in special teams. They haven't given up returns. I mean, they haven't, you know, just had a guy that shakes them. I mean, they make stuff happen on special teams. I mean, stuff doesn't happen to them.
Yeah, and to your point on Jackson Ross, Rob, 14 punts inside the 10-yard line this season. He has five of those 14 punts finished inside the 5-yard line. Just been an incredible weapon for Tennessee, and Josh Heupel has rode that weapon. He's played field position football, I mean, which is totally against what he did the first couple of years when it was, hey, I mean, he had the one deal this year where he went for it from his own 22 or whatever that was, and we're all like, well, what are you
his doing? His own, like, 12, Lord. I think.
Yeah, which that one was a head-scratcher. But otherwise, at midfield, he's played a lot of field position football. Will he continue to do that and trust his defense? My guess is he probably will on Saturday because of the weapon that Jackson Ross has created for them.
Hey, give the coverage units credit as well. Jacoby Thomas, Jalen McMurray, John Slaughter. I mean, they've been busting their tails getting down there and down on those punts too. So they've done a fantastic job. And, I mean,
Jackson Ross holds it like 4 seconds back there.
Before that's true.
He gives you about a 30-yard head start as a gunner. I'm not saying those guys aren't going hard, but
he did against UTEP for sure. I mean, he held that for at some point. I was like, is he going to throw it? I mean, what's he doing back there?
One of them, I just said run because it was wide open. I thought he could easily get the first down on that one, but he's obviously been a huge weapon.
One guy, obviously, there's the gimmies, Nico, Dylan Sampson, you know, but Rob, give me a guy. It's got to click for Tennessee to have a successful day in Nashville and, of course, get that win again.
Wait a minute. This is my question for the Rocky Top Roundtable. You can't this is be your stealing. Question. You can't be stealing.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying this guy's not going to win or lose the game for Tennessee, but I think, you know, Peyton Lewis has got to show up and be good. I mean, and he has been. I mean, and again, he doesn't have to have 100 yards, but – you know, I don't know that you want to have Dylan Sampson going, you know, carrying 30 times on a, you know, cold day in Nashville. So, I mean, he's got to be good. I mean, again, that's not an MVP candidate, but that's a small guy that's got to play a role.
What about you, Austin?
Miles Kitzelman. I'm going to ride the tight ends. I think that they're a key part for Nico.
Yeah.
So I'm going tight end, but Miles Kitzelman in specifics.
I'm going to go Boo Carter because I think it's going to be interesting to see what Tennessee does defensively. Are they going to play three linebackers and play that three linebacker set and take the nickel out of the equation? Or do they feel like because of the quarterback run and some stuff, they want to stay in that nickel stuff? And if they do, then Boo Carter downhill in the run game is going to be important. So is
he's
it going to be
good at that?
Yeah, he's really good. Is it going to be a Caleb Perry game with three linebackers on the field, Eric, or is it going to be a more base defense nickel game because of some stuff that you're worried about that Vanderbilt can do and how they attack your linebackers. I think that if it's a nickel game, then Boo Carter's got to be really physical in this game.
Yeah, and typically, you know, when they come out in 12 personnel, they go out with that 4-3, but obviously we've seen them, you know, switch that up, you know, from various games and in-game as well. So on that note, I'm going to go Aaron Carter. Tennessee's linebackers are going to be stressed in this game because of the quarterback and his ability. Good angles. Linebackers a couple of times against Locklear did not take good angles, and, you know, he was able to get first downs because of that. So I'm going to say Aaron Carter in this one. Let's talk a little college football playoff rankings. Let's look at Tennessee basketball team, all that and more as we continue on here on the Tuesday podcast. But first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Exterior Home Solutions, the presenting sponsor of this show. For a free estimate, dial 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Hey guys, I want to give a shout out to Price Picks. We've been doing this campaign. We did it last football season. We're doing it this football season as well. We've been doing it over on the GameQuest podcast. But if you're unfamiliar with what Price Picks is, you can play $5 and you're going to get $50 instantly if you put in that promo code VQ. Promo code VQ over pricepicks.com/VQ. What it is it's the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Easiest and most exciting way to play DFS, just you against the numbers. So instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, all you have to do is pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and you watch the winnings roll in. So, college football weekend coming up, you can do a couple Tennessee, you can do Nico, Dylan Sampson, you can do, you know, Jalen Milroe of Alabama, Carson Beck of Georgia, whatever the case may be, and they're going to have a stat projection. All you do is you're picking more than or less than. You have to have at least 2, no more than 6. You can do the NFL. You can do other sports as well. All that and more over at Price Picks. And again, watch the winnings roll in. So play $5. Get $50 instantly by putting in that promo code VQ. Promo code VQ at pricepicks.com/VQ. All right, guys. It's going to be fun to watch the college football playoff rankings come out tonight. Again, it wasn't like Tennessee needed, you know, 4 or 5 different things to go their way to get back into the field. But it certainly got that much on Saturday. What a wild day in college football. Rob, where are you expecting Tennessee to be ranked tonight and when these rankings come back out? And how close do you think Tennessee could be? I don't think it'll be tonight, but Tennessee's right back in it, potentially to host a playoff game.
Give me 7. Does that sound right? Is that too
low? It's going to be around there.
I mean, I'll say 7. I mean, I don't feel like I've been great at this all year long, but I mean, because I just can't. I mean, I just can't. Some of the places the Big Ten teams have been mind-boggling. So, I guess 7's probably pretty conservative. I'll go 7.
I guess I should have rephrased this in terms of the seed. Brent, Oregon will be the 1 seed. Texas will be the 2 seed. ACC will be the 3 seed. Whether that be SMU or Miami this week, 4th seed will be the Group of 5. And then you've got to get Penn State in there. You've got to get Georgia in there. You've got to get Notre Dame in there.
You got the Big 12 champion in there somewhere, right? They're going to be on the back end of that.
Well, yeah, they'll in this simulation, that they should be the 12th seed, the last team in. So, like, because of all those teams up there, I think Tennessee probably comes in around the 8th or 9th seed. But, again, depending on what happens this week and conference championship weekend, Tennessee could be, you know, breaking that top 7 or top 8 and host.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, even though they're going to be a 12 seed, I mean, the big 12 is going to be in there with a bye, so that's going to change your seeding, I guess, that they don't have to host a game there as a champion.
It's the top 4 highest conference champions. So like right now, it would be Group of 5 Boise. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the Big 12.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And see, that's the confusing part about all this. That I
think they have to take that out. I mean, I think that they have to take. Because here's the deal. If you're a conference champion, you're either good enough to be one of those or you're playing in a bad league. Okay. I don't think that the group of five should get a bye. To me, you just slot that your top five seeds get a bye or top six, whatever it is, those teams get a bye, regardless of if that's two SEC teams, three Big Ten teams or whatever, whoever's slotted there gets the bye. And then you go from there. I don't think you get into this whole, well, we're going to give the champion of all the leagues that, I mean, I don't like the way that that's done. I think that's a reset that they will make in 26 when they take this thing to 14 teams.
Yeah, I mean,
because I think it's going to create some early round matchups that everybody's going to go, well, that would have been a really good second round matchup.
Yeah, it should be a matchup. As of today, it's either Arizona State or Boise State getting a bye, right? As the four seed, which is really ridiculous.
No. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think Tennessee obviously is back in. You got to handle business this Saturday, and you got to beat Vanderbilt. But here's the interesting part about it as well. I mean, has the ACC gone from a one to a two-bid league?
Well, I mean, it potentially, because the SEC is potentially going from a four-bid to a three-bid league.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not anything that the ACC has done on the field of play to improve their stock. It's the fact that Greg Sankey's best teams – who were 10-point-plus favorites on the road as the road team, all got waxed on Saturday night. So, I mean, when you talk about winners on Saturday, Tennessee was the biggest winner, okay? Indiana, with a loss, was the second biggest winner.
Yep.
And the third biggest winner was the ACC because it potentially put them in as a two-bid league. Don't know that they'll get there, but they've opened up the door for that possibility because the SEC, to Tennessee's blessing, could not handle their business at Auburn and Gainesville or in Norman, Oklahoma.
Rob, I mean, it truly is just kind of this NFL model right now where the SEC is just kind of beating up on one another. And it makes you question, again, this is a bigger picture conversation. We don't necessarily have to have it right now, but it's like, why would you want to go to another conference game to nine games? You know, Greg Sankey, I mean, it's all about money. I recognize that. But, you know, Greg Sankey, as Brent put it Saturday night, he wasn't happy. Tennessee was thrilled. Greg Sankey probably wasn't happy because his teams just continue to beat up on one another.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way you go to nine games. I mean, the coaches in this league would be, you know, all doing their best Brian Kelly impersonation, banging on tables to keep that from happening. And I don't blame them at all. Not when you look at what's out there. I mean, just, you know, this is kind of a tired argument, but you still make it. I mean, Arizona State, like as of today, let's say they're a four seed, they get a bye. If they play, I mean, I'm looking at the Athletic earlier today. The first five, you know, the first teams out are Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina. You think Arizona State would be favored on a neutral field against Alabama, Ole Miss, or South Carolina? I mean, I don't think it would be close.
Yeah, or if it's not the Big 12 champ that gets that four seed, well, say it is a group of five, Boise State? Are you kidding me?
And again, I will be the first to admit I have a horrible SEC bias, but you know, I think it's hard not to And I agree with what Nick Saban said. I don't remember where he said it, but, you know, Oregon, Ohio State, yes, I agree. Those two teams are as good as the best teams in the SEC. But the depth of that league compared to this one is a joke. And nobody can tell me different. I know we talk about this. It's not just, you know, you play two games a year. It's the grind. About, you know, when you play five SEC games in a row, you know, what that does to how that tests your depth, how that tests your roster. And these other leagues, I mean, there's just no comparison.
Well, and again, I think you're looking at it not just conference, how many conference games you're going to play, because I don't think you go to nine. I think you're sitting here looking at it as an AD, how am I going to schedule non-conference games? You know, I mean, if you're the Clemson AD, did it benefit you to play Georgia to start the year? Where are you at? If you're an ACC team right now, if you're a Clemson team right now, and you've got what, one loss, what would you be? A two loss Clemson team? I mean, as opposed to where you're at, I mean,
and you hadn't been humiliated.
Yeah,
that's a unique one as well. Because remember, Clemson's got South Carolina, Georgia's got Georgia Tech, Kentucky's got Louisville. You still got that one on rivalry weekend too. So like, heck no, it doesn't benefit you.
No, and I think when you're scheduling teams, I think you're gonna. I mean, look, it benefited Indiana not to play Louisville this year, which they were originally scheduled to play. You know, I think you just look at those things and you say, hey, if this is how it's done, then what's the benefit of playing those matchups? And there's not. Now the home fans, you know, get, you know, they're disappointed in the results of that because you don't get some of the games that you would like to have. I think Clemson, Georgia is a great game to open college football with. You like those types of games, but where's the benefit in playing them? And I think that's the question every AD out there is asking themselves right now and will ask over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks when they think about future scheduling. Are we valuing the strength of schedule as a committee, or are they not valuing the strength of schedule as a committee? It's the same narrative that we've had in basketball, right, Rob, for several years. What's the value of the conference tournament? Is it worth going? We're asking this question in baseball, too. Is it worth going down there and trying to win a conference championship? How much did it hurt Tennessee last year losing to Mississippi State in the opening round? Did it cost them a one seed? I don't think we'll ever know. But, you know, what's going to be the committee's value on strength of schedule in football? What's the committee's value in basketball? It used to be RPI. Then it was KenPom. And then it was postgame. Then it was the last 10. It's always a moving target. But from a football standpoint, when you're scheduling 8 or 10 years out, I don't know that there's value to schedule those big-time clashes, those big matchups. It doesn't feel like it right now, and this year in particular, Rob.
I couldn't agree more at all. And I don't know. I mean, it's a mentality thing. Because basketball, I mean, you can schedule tough and lose in the non-conference and still in March. I mean, it doesn't hurt you. And I guess it's because – you're talking about a body of work of, you know, 38 games as opposed to 12 games. And I mean, I would guess that's the biggest difference, but no, I just don't. The SEC to me has been in this first year. I mean, this is the first year, maybe things will be different, but to me, they've been at a very competitive disadvantage because of how difficult the league is. And because apples and, you know, it's apples and oranges when you compare wins and losses.
I mean, Brent, have you ever, it makes fans do weird things. Brent, have you ever, in all your years of sitting in that box covering Tennessee home games, have you ever seen anybody cheer for Florida when Florida, you know, like, I mean, there were some student sections doing the Gator Chomp.
Yeah, I mean, it's, listen, it creates strange bedfellows. And for college football, I mean, they've never had a better week before Thanksgiving week of football in their life.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everybody's got their phone out, they're watching the game, or they got four games going at one time on their computer screen or on their flat screen television, or you're at one game and you're watching another game. I mean, how many people were hoping Rocky Top Wi-Fi worked well so they could watch the Florida game on their phone while Tennessee was manhandling Utah? Oh, yeah. That's exactly what college football wants, and that's exactly what college football has gotten. I think the question now becomes, as an AD and as a coach, like, okay, how do we manage this new world of college football from a scheduling standpoint, you know, the right way? I mean, Tennessee's scheduled to go to Nebraska in a few years. Is that a game you really want to play? Is there value in playing that game? Is there not value in playing that game? I think if you're, you know, if you're in the Big 12, you probably need a conference win, a win over a Big 10 team or an ACC or an SEC team. It probably helps you. But is the value of playing that game if you're an SEC team there to do that? I don't see the value in that.
Take next year, for example. I mean, first of all, the kickoff classic or whatever in Atlanta, that's silly. You know, Tennessee Syracuse. It does Tennessee no good to play that game, but maybe it does Syracuse.
It does. How much does Notre Dame benefit from beating Texas A&M? I mean, gargantuan.
Yeah.
To the resume.
Well, yeah. I mean, enough that it offsets losing to Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and then Notre Dame got to favor that, you know, Army was supposed to be really good. They're ranked. Navy was really good. And the reality was, you know, those teams have had nice years, but they're not, they can't line up and play, you know, with those teams like that. But yeah, I mean, I do think it benefits an ACC school to knock off an SEC team. Now, if you lose that game, it's a killer, or it hurts Clemson that they lost to Georgia. So is it worth playing that if you're Clemson? You know, probably not, because you're Clemson. You get enough gravitas because you're Clemson, because you've been in the conversation, you've won championships, your logo's carrying a little more weight than some other ACC school's logo might be carrying right now. I mean, Clemson's going to get the benefit of the doubt over SMU in a lot of cases in the eyes of people, okay? I mean, now, They're not because of their records. I mean, Clemson's a two-loss team. But if Clemson were a one-loss team, okay, and SMU were a one-loss team, and I think that's where they are, right?
Yeah, SMU's one-loss team.
Are they two-loss teams? Anyway, they have the same number. They I think Clemson has another loss than SMU has. If they have the equal number of equal record, then Clemson gets the benefit over the doubt of SMU because they're Clemson. So does Clemson need to play a Power Five matchup out of conference? Does it benefit Clemson? My answer to that is no. I mean, I don't think it does. You know, because again, I think Clemson's lost to Louisville and to Georgia. That's their two losses.
Yeah, SMU's a one loss. Yeah,
and SMU's a one. But if they were a two loss team and they had equal, they had an equal number of losses. So say Clemson had played Wofford in week one, and they were a one loss team, and SMU was a one loss team. Who's ranked higher in the playoff rankings? Is it going to go off strength of schedule, or is it going to be Clemson because they're Clemson? Yeah. My answer to you is I think it's probably going to be Clemson because they're Clemson.
I agree.
And so why do you want to play that game if you're Clemson? And I think that's what ADs have to look at in terms of future scheduling with the playoff system the way it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, there were just so many unknowns about this first year. Like, I mean, obviously through 3 weeks of the rankings, I think we can all agree that strength of schedule has not been a big emphasis. It's mainly just been about how many losses you have and when you had those. And, you know, a couple of years ago when, you know, people were getting ready for the expanded playoffs, you know, either some ADs were trying to get out of some of these games, some ADs were trying to schedule games because they thought they might need it, and now we're kind of seeing it play out and trying to see exactly what the committee values and all that. So,
And is strength of schedule going to remain not as big of a factor moving forward?
Exactly.
Does it change when the committee changes?
Yeah, because the committee changes, Brent, what, every year?
I mean, every couple of years, I think, anyway. I mean, so
yeah.
What is the next thing that the next group is looking at? I always think that's going to be fascinating to see. It's a challenge for ADs because you have to schedule so far out that you're not sure exactly what to do. But I'm just telling you, if I'm the SEC, I'm not adding a league game, and I'm not encouraging my team. I mean, if that rule stays in place where you got to play a Power Four team, I'm playing a lower tier Power Four team. I'm not playing an upper tier Power Four team.
Yeah. Well, Tennessee should be in pretty decent shape later tonight when the college football playoff rankings come out, and a chance to continue to move on up if you handle business in the mid-state on Saturday. And, of course, depending on what happens around the country, it's as simple as this: win and you're in. And, of course, we'll be previewing that matchup all week long. Hey, before we call it quits, Rob, I want to get a quick talk real quick about basketball. First of all, news came out earlier this week, a season-ending injury to a big man. How is Tennessee going to compensate with the loss of Estrella?
Yeah, tough to lose JP. I mean, really hate it for the kid. I mean, talk about a guy that's popular with his teammates. I mean, just a hard worker, really conscientious. And, you know, a big piece of the puzzle. I mean, you look at his numbers, he hadn't played a lot of minutes, you know, so far this year. That's, you know, partly a reflection of, you know, the foot injury that he had been dealing with. And, you know, they'd been battling with this, you know, going back to the summer, you know, whether, you know, shut it down and have surgery, you know, hope that it gets better with, you know, rest and treatment. And finally, you know, it just kept lingering, had a setback last week and just made the difficult decision to shut it down. As for, you know, filling in, I mean, Tennessee's in a tough spot now. I mean, 10 scholarship players, I mean, 9 until Cam Carr comes back from his thumb injury, which, you know, should be early in conference play, if not by conference play. It was a real positive sign that Donaldson Dubar, a guy that, you know, I think a lot of people around the program weren't sure he was going to contribute at all this year, but, you know, hadn't played at all, played 12 minutes against Baylor the other night. And that's, you know, if he can give you something and be a role player, that just became real big, you know, for a guy at the four. Cause, you know, 3 weeks ago, I really liked Tennessee's post rotation a lot. And now there's question marks, but, you know, I don't want to make too much of it. I mean, if Dubar is the guy that they thought he was when they, you know, signed him in April out of the portal and the way he looked in summer, then he can definitely help them. I mean, he's, you know, obviously gone through some stuff, been away from the team for a little bit. And, but I thought very encouraging that they were able to get something out of him in the Bahamas and he had not practiced a lot before that. So good sign on that front. And man, I mean, Chaz Lanier there, if people were wondering, there you go.
He's good.
Rob, I'm curious about this team from a why they've been, and I know Rick Barnes is all about defense, and I know how much they work on defense, and I see the post on the board, like, when the offense is not going well, it's like, is Rick Barnes Norman Dale, and you're not allowed to shoot the ball in practice, and all these types of things. But you have a bunch of new faces and I know you got some veteran guys, but you have some other new faces. Why is this team gelled so quickly defensively the way that they have when you talk about what they did at Louisville and what they did in the Bahamas? Why does this team click so fast defensively?
Well, I mean, I don't know if this is the same answer Coach Barnes would give you, but my big one is Jamai and Zakai being you know, the tip of the spear and two guys that talk. They are big time leaders. They do a great job of communicating on the court. And I think they have really eased the transition for everybody. You know, both those guys have not only been in this system, they played, you know, all 4 years. I mean, they've been dudes that have played. And you just talk about extension of the head coach. I mean, they are conscientious, hard workers, and that stuff rubs off. And also, I mean, I think another one, I might be oversimplifying it. I think Okpara. I think he makes everybody's job easier. I think guys are not afraid to just really get up on their guys and you know, take chance. Not saying take chances on steals, but really be aggressive on the ball. You know, not giving open looks, getting in passing lanes because they know they got that big dude back there that's, you know, ready to swat it in the third row. But I think the big thing more is Jamai and Zakai and the way that they just kind of bring everybody along with them and bring them up to their level of intensity.
So you're not surprised where they are defensively?
Oh, no, I'm not surprised. I'm just saying if you want an answer, that would be my answer. I am surprised that they are so in tune and connected on that end of the court. Well, I mean, offensively, too. I mean, both. I mean, they're shooting 54% from the field. And it's, you know, I'm not saying they've not played a murderer's row, but, I mean, six games, they played three Power Four teams. I mean, a couple of ACC teams. And Baylor, who I think – I'll be surprised if Baylor isn't good. I mean, they didn't look it the other night. But, you know, I think that will be a good basketball team.
Tennessee's got UT Martin coming up tomorrow afternoon. Rob, a little 4 p.m. tip off. Excited about that one. And then games against a couple of power teams in Syracuse, Miami, and the Jimmy V Classic, Illinois. And then a couple more cupcakes before you get into the SEC schedule. A lot going on right now over at VolQuest.com. Basketball, recruiting talk, of course, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Tennessee in the college football playoff conversation. All that and more happening right now over on the Journalist Quarters and at VolQuest.com. Brent Hubbs, it's a great time to join us over there right now because, you know, the best insider notes from Tennessee athletics, and there's just so much going on right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure some people listening to this going, wait a minute, you guys didn't dive into any football recruiting in this podcast, and what's the story on that? I mean, the reality is right now when you're this close to signing day, you're in real time. I mean, things are changing by the minute. Obviously, we're not doing this live in real time, so we want to be careful about not presenting and giving information that was accurate at the time that we recorded something, but it's not accurate an hour later. So that's why you didn't get the deep dive into recruiting in this podcast, but we're deep diving into it on the Generals Quarters, keeping you up to date as things happen by the minute, by the hour, by the day, if you will, in recruiting with this final push. So we'll continue to do that. Obviously, you know, this is a coaching staff that if you go back to look at some of their quotes back in August, they talked about playing an extended season, a long season. You're playing extra bodies because you're playing an extended season. This is a program that had it was not a wish to get in the playoffs. It was an absolute goal and a mindset that they were going to get there. They have gotten themselves on the doorstep of it. Can they knock the door down? We're going to cover all of that to get you ready for Tennessee and Vanderbilt at noon Eastern on Saturday. Plus hoops and everything else that's going on out there right now. It's a great time to check us out. Getting ready to get into the portal season after signing day. Yeah. The wackiness that is college athletics is only going to continue here over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks. Should be fun.
The worst month of the year for college football coaches, but for us and for fans, it's a great month because there's so much going on. That is the month of December. And yeah, who knows? You know, Tennessee might be preparing for a you know, college football playoff game. So
and not in Knoxville. It could be a home game. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get here. So, it's you got to really compartmentalize if you're a head coach right now, the CEO hat of all the things you have to do, thinking about your roster and I've got a plan for this, I've got a plan for that. What happens if we don't land this person? What happens if we do land this person? What happens if this guy walks in and says, "Hey, I'm looking for more, and I'm going to greener pastures if I don't"? You got to have all of that. And at the same time, too, you're trying to figure out how to make a first down. And the first down may be the most critical first down of the year because it might determine whether or not you go to the college football playoff. Now, they get paid a lot of money, right, Rob Lewis? So we're not going to – nobody's having a pity party for them. I know where that's at. There's a lot going on this time of year. This is the true crossover for all those guys, and we're going to cover it all for you.
Couldn't do it without our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. You can dial this phone number for a free estimate at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been East Tennessee's number one source for roofing, siding, windows, and garage since 1999. That is 25 years, if you haven't heard already, 1999 Exterior Home Solutions. For Austin Price, Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys for joining us here. We'll be back on Thursday with the mailbag portion of the show for your Thanksgiving Day holiday. All that and more right here at BalkWest.com.
You've been listening to the BalkWest podcast every week here on BalkWest.